Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A big story here this week was that warehouse fire in South St. Louis. It was a dangerous one for the firefighters. That warning siren recorded by David Carson of the Post-Dispatch undoubtedly saved some firefighters' lives. Nearby residents were warned to stay inside to avoid breathing potentially toxic air. Joining us to talk about it is Captain Garen Mosby of the St. Louis Fire Department. Garen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, or good afternoon.
It is afternoon now, yes. Bring us up to speed on the status of that situation right now, would you?
So we're still there. Just a tremendous fire load on what was described to me a very beautiful warehouse on the inside. I had the opportunity to speak with one of the owners this morning and a couple gentlemen that worked in the warehouse. But still burning. We just relieved crews there. I actually just left. The truck that was destroyed in the, we'll call it the episode or the event, because I can't definitively say that that was a backdraft. I can't say that it was a smoke explosion. Just don't know. But it was a tremendous amount of energy that caused, again, the event. So the tow truck is arriving, should be arriving here shortly to tow that damaged fire truck from the scene. But we still have crews on scene pouring, you know, just a tremendous amount of water still into the building because we still have, you know, smoldering.
Going back to that event, that was a close call for a lot of firefighters, including yourself.
Yeah, it was it's probably one of the scariest moments of my career, easily, hands down. But, you know, we'll do an after-action report and look at what we did right, what we could improve upon. Every firefighter walks away from an incident, regardless of the incident. What could I have done better? What could we have done differently? There were some really great things that occurred on that scene. And for one, the sirens that you just played, the evacuation. In speaking with the owners this morning, I learned that there were only two access points to the basement in that entire warehouse. So you have a block by half block warehouse, and this is a warehouse. So there are only two access points, and where the fire was versus the access points, realistically, Don, if I knew exactly the layout, it isn't realistic that you get an attack line to that fire. It's just a, when I learned that this morning, it blew my mind just how far our members had to go to try to put the fire out, try to locate it. But some good things happened, and that evacuation was probably one of the best things happening because we had members on the roof and we had just quite a few members in the basement. And as you could imagine, there are not a lot of ways out of a basement. It's not like you can go to the window and crawl out or knock out a pane and be out. So that evacuation call saved lives, and it got us into a transitioning phase where people on the outside were starting to be updated that, hey, this is getting worse. We got to get back.
What triggered the evacuation call?
So we had continuous smoke conditions. And one of the, you know, it's rare for a David Carson, who just did a phenomenal job, or a J.B. Forbes, to show up to one of our fires and have something to shoot. They complain about it all the time. We'd been there a while, and I don't have the exact amount of time, but we hadn't located the scene of the fire. We had crews in the basement, and obviously a fire is going to grow. So you've got the amount of time that passes. We've got thermal imaging cameras down there, and I'm hearing crews come out. We've got smoke. We're not locating heat. That's concerning. And I think one of the incident commander's primary concern, we know there's a fire there, obviously. The smoke conditions are increasing. We've got a roof team saying that they've got some visible fire, which is very concerning, and conditions are deteriorating there, and we're not locating the fire in the basement. So the fact that you've got crews in the basement and there's no easy way out, just a great call to back them out, because if he doesn't, well, I'm not talking to you today, for one.
Yeah.
But the conversation's completely different.
Whose call is it specifically?
So the deputy chief, and I'll just Deputy Chief Walsh, he is the A-shift commander. So he was incident command, and everything funneled through him. The decisions, the difficult decisions, the challenging decisions, all the decisions funneled from him. And that was the best call made all day. I'm not shy about saying that, was to pull those crews out.
He's a hero.
We can call him a hero, because if he doesn't do that, and it does a few things, Don. You pull people out of the building, and then it becomes apparent that we are transitioning into a defensive attack. Like we if we can get in and do it, we're an aggressive firefighting department. So if we can get in and knock the fire down, that reduces the damage. But when that isn't feasible, pulling crews out, everyone on the scene knows now we're going into a defensive stance. So we started to move equipment. You know, it's a different approach. So in doing that, it sends a clear and concise message that we're changing our tactics and, you know, we take it cautiously, but even more so now.
Does a defensive attack mean you just want to keep it from spreading? Is that what that's about?
Right. You're basically confining the fire to the building. Okay. There was some discussion on possibly reattacking in a different way, you know, finding out more information about this building. You know, this is a warehouse. So it's not like I come to your house and I'm like, okay, you got the front door, you got the back door, I see these windows. You know, this is a very large scene. So there was some thought that perhaps there was another way to attack this fire. But again, it was verified to me today that there were only two entry points. And, you know, just based on the conditions as they presented themselves, the only call to be made was the call that he made.
The siren we heard in the beginning in the introduction to this segment doesn't do justice to what it really sounds like on the scene. Is there any question that someone might not have been able to hear that?
Not likely. Yeah. You know, I've been inside a building before and you hear that horn and you've got a couple things going on. Every firefighter in the St. Louis Fire Department has a radio. So if the radio's on, that even if you're on a different channel, that messaging is given over several channels so that you have the opportunity to know that the building's being evacuated. Now, I'll tell you, as being an interior firefighter for several years, you don't like that most of the time because if you have the fire in your midst, you're like, no, we're getting it. But when you hear those horns, it is everyone knows what it means. It's a universal signal, and once you get out, a lot of times you realize that the picture's much bigger than what you had. You only have a snapshot, and the incident commander has the complete picture.
You said a moment ago that you wouldn't be here today if it weren't for that siren and the need to move. You were doing what? You were briefing the press at the time, weren't you?
Right. We were on the other side of the 14's truck on the sidewalk.
The damaged truck.
The damaged truck, right. And prior to doing the interview, I surveyed the building conditions and was comfortable based on what I surveyed that we could do it there. It would give them a good shot of the building. You know, I learned a ton yesterday as a public information officer, and I always want – there's a fine line in getting the media what they need and what they want, and then their safety, of course, is paramount. But as I'm watching, because there was a reporter there that live-streamed the entire – interview, as I'm watching the conditions of the building behind me, which I cannot see, I see some concerns. So we were fairly close. I think it was a minute and 40 some seconds after the interview, which in the interview I told them that we were going to be relocating them because we were in what is the collapse zone and it's not safe for us to be there. So after this, we're moving. And a minute 40 something seconds afterwards, you know, I tell them to move. A couple things happened and I knew we were in a bad spot.
The EPA is on site now, as I understand it.
Yes, sir.
What exactly are these people doing?
So their concern right now primarily is asbestos. They are taking samples more or less from the upwind side. This building was erected in the late 1920s. So there's some concern that there was some asbestos present. They held a press conference there to announce that they were doing such, and I believe the results will be made available to the health department on Monday.
Is it too early to give the public, the people in the neighborhood, any kind of reassurance that all is well, that what they're breathing is safe?
Right. You know, the day of, you had this plume that stretched, I was told, 20 miles and yeah. Could be seen.
You see it in the satellites.
Right. Yeah, and it was on the weather satellite. And I held a briefing just before the 5 o'clock news, and that's when we were comfortable saying that this was a hazardous materials fed fire. Now, early on in the incident, I'm going to circle back to your question, but early on in the incident, we had a report from one of the worker occupants, the gentleman that was transported, that there was magnesium in the basement.
Uh-oh.
So this worked out for us because hearing that, the incident commander at the time requested the hazmat chief. And eventually the hazmat team was dispatched as well because we thought we had a hazmat product. Now, it was later that was not true, but we had the resources on scene for a hazardous material incident. And then later on in the incident, I think I became aware just before the 5 o'clock news. They said that there were 150,000 17-ounce citronella candles in the warehouse. So, and I should be really clear about this for those in the neighborhood. There was some question as to whether or not the individuals that operated the warehouse did something improper. We have what's called a Tier 2 facility, and a Tier 2 facility is required to report to your local fire department and other agencies what it is that you have on property. The challenge here, it has to do with how it's packaged. So if it's in a large tanker, you've got to report that. If you have smaller consumer sizes, you don't. But from the fire service perspective, if I've got 150,000 of a consumer-sized product, it's going to burn collectively. So that's a hazardous material or a hazardous materials fed fire to me. We were wanting to err on the side of over-cautioning folks by telling them to shut off their HVAC systems. We reached out to the hospitals early on because the plume was headed directly towards, you know, Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. And we wanted, you know, whatever your protocol is, if your HVAC system pulls in outside air, understand that this is headed your way, and please take the proper precautions. So we encouraged homeowners, you know, if you don't have to be out, don't be. Go home, shelter in place, close your windows, shut off your HVAC, just eliminating any possibility that, and a lot of residential homes don't pull in the outside air, but if your home's not completely sealed, perhaps you are drafting in some outside air.
What about the asbestos threat, the potential asbestos threat? I mean, wind could blow that stuff around and still be a problem.
You know what? Here's where I'm going to stay in my lane, Don, and I'm not going to dodge the question, but I will say it. We'll wait for the EPA's results, and I'll leave that to the health department to figure out how we move forward on that. I am not 100% sure, but you're absolutely correct, and I do understand the need for concern. Immediately afterwards, or during the fire, we took readings, and a lot of what we found are chemicals. They're byproducts. You just a ton of things burning were byproducts of things that you would commonly find in a fire. High carbon monoxide levels, carbon dioxide levels. But go ahead.
I was just going to ask when we could expect to hear from the EPA. Do you have any idea?
Well, and as far as the asbestos, the results should be made to the health department on Monday. Now, I'm not certain if that's something that the health department will come out and release, or if the EPA, I'm not sure how that is funneled out to the public, or how, you know, that information's relayed. I'm drifting back into my lane here, Don.
That's all right.
But I'm certain that those results will be made to the public, and we'll be encouraged in what to do or not to do.
Another big question that I don't think can be answered just yet is everyone's wondering about the cause. We don't know, do we?
So what we do know is that this fire started in the basement. And unfortunately, for determining a cause of the fire, a lot of the materials, the outer walls, the collapsing, it collapsed onto the basement. So in order for the investigators to realistically say definitively, this is what started, they need to be in the basement. And the city fire department doesn't have the resources. Let me start this way. First, it's not safe to put investigators in that shell of a building. And then we don't really have the resources to dig it out.
May never know.
We may never know. Well, you know what? Short of new information, you know, someone might walk up to us tomorrow and said, you know what? Here's how it started, and, you know, it's credible, and we can go with that and fill in the blanks from there. But short of new information, we may never know.
Got to wrap this up. But we have a caller that has a question here that I think can be answered.
Okay.
Ken, very quickly, please, you're on the air.
Yes, I work at SLU Med School, and one of the problems that I had was that they left on the HVAC the entire day, even though while we had concerns with the safety department that you know, there was obviously, you know, intake into the building, and there's not much, I guess, filtering processing for that.
So the question is, are you safe? I guess he's gone.
Okay. So this can be somewhat reassuring. And in the chemicals or the gases that we were able to measure, you have what's called volatile organic compounds, basically measuring the toxicity of the air. And we didn't find anything, and this is from very close proximity to the fire building. If you inhale or suffer from smoke inhalation, which would be our primary concern, the health concern is that if you have an existing respiratory condition, right? If you have asthma or COPD or something of that nature, inhaling these irritants it could spark an event for you with an existing respiratory condition. Firefighters, as you know, have a higher cancer rate, a higher rate of being diagnosed with a variety of cancers than the normal public. Part of that reason is because of the chronic exposure to the conditions that were present the other day. If you're a civilian or a citizen and you just happen upon it, there is no curse that you're automatically going to be, you know, subjected to being diagnosed with a form of cancer. Is it great for you? Absolutely not. Is it catastrophic? You know, it's not escalating your risk to where we are, because ours is because of a chronic exposure. But I will say, if you have a headache today, you know, that could be a result of maybe some smoke inhalation concerns, because the way this stuff functions, it gets into your bloodstream and it has an effect on folks.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Captain Garen Mosby, thank you so much for being with us and giving us so much information in a short period of time. We certainly appreciate it. Now back to work. I know it's been a busy week for you.
Always a pleasure, Don. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure's all mine. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.